Thank you. I think that most of us have struggled from time to time with the process of learning. We wish to know a little bit more about something, but we're not quite able to grasp the concept or the idea. Now, I have discovered that if we persevere long enough, we will reach that point when all is made perfectly clear. And this is what I call the aha moment. That instant when all of a sudden it just all comes together. And we say, well, of course, it makes perfect sense. And we wonder why we weren't able to see it before. Now, when it does come to concepts and ideas, exactly what is it that we see? How does it work? Well, we really are not talking about the vision of the human eye. We're talking about perception. It is the perception of something that allows for discernment and understanding. Now, perception, it is a quality that goes beyond thought. It is sensing, feeling, and knowing that something is so. So when we consider our questions about truth, we understand that our study will be of a spiritual nature, taking us beyond that mental thought and the vision of the human eye. And at first, well, we do struggle a little bit. It may take us a very long time before we reach our aha moment, that time when we can say, before I was spiritually blind, but now I see. A study of any religion includes a study of the Bible. We begin with those little stories in the Old Testament. We read about Moses and his relationship with God. We learn there was a time when Moses was able to step outside his previous understanding and declare, I am that I am. Then there was that little story about Job. After much trial and tribulation, he reached a point of confession and acceptance, and he said, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, and now mine eye seeth thee. I think that would be the eye of perception. And in the New Testament, we read Paul's revelation. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth me. These statements by Moses, Job, and Paul reflect their aha moment, that time when they knew without a doubt that God is, and beside him there is none else. Now the title of today's lesson is Now I See, but I could also call it Knowing God Aright. Moses, Job, and Paul. They certainly had some concept or idea of God before their moment of clarity. But perhaps that's all they had, a concept or an idea. Their statements were statements of realization, indicating that something special had happened to them, that before they were spiritually blind, but now they see. They are letting us know that they know God aright. We may study, we may reason about God, but until we feel, sense, and know him as personal experience, we will not be able to know him aright. Now, until the importance of knowing God aright is understood, there is little use in attempting to learn the truth about us. Yes, we would like to get to that place where we can say, now I see. We admit we've read about God. We've done a little studying about truth. But until it is revealed in us, we will not know it. And we want to be like Moses, Job, and Paul after their personal realization. We want to perceive clearly what we feel in the heart. We think that a good place to begin would be the Bible. Surely the Bible will tell us how we can arrive at our moment of clarity. Metaphysics teaches the Bible as states and stages of consciousness, beginning with those trials and tribulations of man's early conflicts in the Old Testament. Now eventually, we find us studying the message of the New Testament. One that reveals a God of love. One that never leaves us or forsakes us. We follow the teachings of Jesus as he tells us the truth about us. Now all of this traveling through the Bible, it takes place in consciousness. We have been told that this is every man's and every woman's journey, evolving from the Adam sense of life to Christ consciousness. And we consider all of this to be good information. We are certain that by the time we get to the end of the book of Revelation, that we will have arrived at that place where we can say, now I see. As human beings, we can relate to those earlier times in the Old Testament, associating us with the various states of consciousness described as Noah, Abraham, and King Solomon. We could go through the entire Bible, admitting that, yes indeed, we have noticed all of these traits in us. So we begin to analyze and examine us with the hope of weeding out those concerns and ideas that allow us to do battle, the ones that allow us to tarry in the wilderness or to languish in the valley. Now all of this is quite interesting, really it is, and working in this way can keep us very, very busy. In our sincerity, we begin to try to fix us, working our way through the battles and the conflicts assigned to the personality. But let us get back to the Bible. Jesus did not deal with personalities and what they happen to be going through as experience. This is not our reality, and there is no need to stay there. Let us not define us according to particular conditions or circumstances. Jesus told us to stop living in states of consciousness that have nothing to do with us. He said that we cannot find in the outer what can only be found in the inner. And then he took us inside us. He called us of that comforter in us, the one that would teach us all things, revealing the depths of God. He was quite clear when he said that we find the kingdom of heaven in us, the kingdom of love, of power, and life. And this is where he wants us to be. When we dwell in this place, we learn to know God aright. And you know, that really should be our only desire in our spiritual study. So let's talk about God and his kingdom. We say that God is life. Now, can anybody tell me the particular components of life? A scientist can tell us the active ingredients involved in his experiment. But what are the elements of life? We say that God is love. Can anyone analyze for me what love is? Can anyone give me a recipe for love? We say that God is wisdom. Can anyone weigh or measure wisdom? Can anybody catch and box up, see or handle spirit? These are qualities of inner being, and they cannot be described through the limitation of language. Words simply do not go far enough. If we follow the teachings of Jesus, we understand that all true revelation is given to the soul of man. The Comforter is within us, and all are taught of God. It is true that we can gain knowledge through books. We may learn through discussion and study. We may amuse ourselves for a very long time, noticing our various states of consciousness, sometimes finding us out there in the wilderness or in the valley, and at other times on the mountaintop. But all of this simply describes the process of the human being as he wanders through his stages of awareness. When we know us as that one who lives in the Father's house, we no longer know us as that man of personality strolling through various states of consciousness, trying to find himself. John the Baptist, he said it quite nicely. Now, John was an illumined human being. He was aware that his human personality was not the true identity. He spoke of Christ, the one who would come after him. And so he said, I must decrease so that he may increase. Increase until there was nothing left to the identity of that man of flesh. So if we were to learn from that Comforter within, to be taught of God, then what do we do with those little stories in the Bible? The ones we thought were very essential to our progression from sense awareness to Christ consciousness. What do we do with them? We felt we needed to work with our thoughts so that we could be in a better state of consciousness. Logically, we felt that a high mountain was a better place than the wilderness, and the way to get there is to change our thinking. But Jesus told us to take no thought. So just what are we to do? Well, let us not discard those little stories just yet. The thing is this. Without those stories, we would not know there is such a thing as I am that I am. Before I was blind, but now I see. Or I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth me. Without these declarations of freedom, we may continue working with us, trying to dig our way out of those battles, hoping for victory. I want to share with you how the author Lillian DeWaters handled this information. Now, she told us that when she began the study of metaphysics, that she also began a study of the Bible. And she too noticed those little stories. But she went beyond the personality and what it was going through. She did not linger in the realm of changing scenes and characters. She said it was in the Bible that she learned to turn from all else to God direct. She was not concerned with biblical personalities or with their problems. What stood out for her above all else was this. When the people turned to God, they received light and revelation. They walked and they talked with God, and they found peace and freedom. I would add that when the people turned to God above all else, they knew Him aright. I think this is the value of the little stories. So often we read of those trials and the tribulations, the problems, and the states of consciousness that supports them. And we feel we need to do something to make them better. But Lillian did not do this. She did not try to correct the human being or its condition. She focused her attention on the fact that when those people in the little stories turned to God, they received light and understanding. The Comforter came and helped them not to be afraid. Nor did Lillian just consider this good information. No, she told us she applied it to herself. She said that she turned to God above all else, and she too found light, glory, peace, and freedom. And she was free of the personality with its various degrees of consciousness. Now, to explain how one lives in his own consciousness, how he knows reality or the spiritual world, this cannot adequately be described. It is by intuition. It perceives and beholds things as they truly are. It is sensing, feeling, and knowing beyond words and thoughts. Moses could tell us, "I am that I am." But could he adequately explain how he came to that conclusion? No. He allowed the statement to stand alone. Paul may have said, "I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth me." But he was not able to tell us how he knew that. He allowed the statement to speak for itself. We cannot describe or put into words what is received in the heart. Simply cannot be done. Now, Jesus touched on this when he asked his disciples, "Who say the people that I am?" Now, some answered, "John the Baptist." Others, Elijah, or perhaps one of those other prophets. And then Jesus asked, "But who say ye that I am?" And Peter answered, "Thou art Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonas, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven." And he told us that heaven is within. Flesh and blood, words and thoughts, they cannot reveal the realities of life. And if we continue to rely on them for our understanding, we will not arrive at that place where we can say, "Now I see." The point of today's lesson is that no matter what we are going through, no matter if we are wandering in the wilderness of uncertainty, or if we're being tossed around by those storms of condition or circumstance, all that is asked of us is that we turn to God. Now, this will be a challenge for the metaphysician who does his work in the changing attitudes of personal awareness. This will be a challenge for the one who thinks he's got to do something on his own. Our method may be to think positive thoughts, to deny what is not real and affirm what is real. We may declare that yes are good, it will come to us, or that health is our natural state. But until the Comforter reveals our reality, we will not know what we are talking about. So we might as well stop talking. I cannot emphasize enough that the study and the practice of truth is personal. Books, lectures, discussions, they may point the way, but they pale in comparison to knowledge from within. We turn to God on our own. We enter the kingdom individually. Now we may study and discuss with others, but we do not hold hands and march into heaven together. Each must determine his method of learning. Will we choose to serve God or man? Now, at some point, we really do need to put away all of those books, even the Bible. Stop talking, go within, and say, "Speak, Lord, I am listening." Now, if we go to God and continue to chatter, the Comforter will not be able to teach us anything. If we continue to bask in our own understanding, we will not be able to receive the light of true wisdom. We will not know God aright. The first thing that we must do is admit that God is omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. And really, there is no room for anything else. I mean, think about it. If God is present everywhere, then it should not be too difficult to find him. If God is all-powerful, then what is there to fear? If God is all-knowing, then what could we possibly tell him that he does not already know? With this perception of God, we do not have anything to show him or to tell him. This allows us to just sit in his presence and receive light, peace, and freedom. No need to think or really do anything at all. Now, I'll admit at first, this is difficult to do. We're so used to doing all of the talking that in our prayer time, we might not be totally able to contain ourselves. But that's okay. God understands. He can read our hearts and knows our motive is pure. So it's okay if we chat a little bit and then we say, "Now, God, I did not say any of this for your benefit. This was for my benefit so that I could get still inside. This is new to me, and I'm still working it out. So sometimes I just have to say it, but again, it has nothing to do with you. You are already complete in yourself. You do not need my help or my suggestions." Having admitted this, let's just rest and wait on the Lord. Now, the waiting is actually watching God do the work, going before us, making every crooked place straight. This is our private moment with God in the sanctuary of our soul's awareness. And now we may declare, "Before I was spiritually blind, but now I see." This morning we have the opportunity to turn to God first above all else. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? In a time of meditation, we go beyond words and thoughts be our desires and aspirations. In the solitude of the moment, we release all concerns of the world with its demands and its expectations. In the absence of thought, we find us in a consciousness of stillness, one not known to reason and intent. It is there that we are free to listen with the inner ear. We are free to perceive with the eye divine. To abide in this way, we neither fear nor doubt. The lifted view reveals God's kingdom, recognizing life as harmonious, whole, and complete. And when we place us in the stream of life, we find it's just where we are supposed to be, doing what we are meant to do. We are about our Father's business, conscious that divine intelligence, wisdom, and deep discernment guide and direct our every word, our every act, and deed. Throughout the coming week, let us go often to the mountaintop of high knowing. It is there that we commune with God, and we know there is none else. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May He cause His light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within, acknowledge Him, so that He may lift your consciousness and give you His peace. Amen.